We are in week three of a series called Don't Trust Your Heart. And this series began several months ago in my mind as I saw a group of friends, one of them looking for direction, not sure what direction to go in life. And the person sitting across the table said, "Hey, just trust your heart. Go with your gut." And I'm thinking, wow, is there wisdom in that? Or is that just a pop culture cliche that we just say and we just spew without even thinking about it? And we're learning in this teaching series, at least I am, that, man, our hearts are often bending towards evil. Like, our hearts are often, what's in it for me, and then I'll decide if I do something for you. Our hearts are often, only give a little and hold on to a lot. Our hearts are often defensive. When somebody who loves us comes and says, "Hey, have you looked at it like that?" And we bow up and we're like, "No, no, no. Don't tell me how to run my life." Our hearts are often selfish and they bend us towards that. So if that's correct, and I'm just giving a few examples, if that's correct, then why would we want to follow a leader like that, right? Like, why would we want to follow a leader that bends us towards selfishness and egotistical, what's in it for me, right? I'm certain that if you had an interview with a potential employer and you saw that his heart was completely bent this way in that interview, you would not go there because there would be red flags that say, "Wait, that's not where I want to go." So in our lives, the question I pose is, what do we do with our heart then? I mean, it's the center of everything we are. Our emotions, our actions, our thoughts are born here in the heart, more than an organ, more than the organ that pumps 1,500 gallons of blood, more than an organ that pumps thousands of times a day. Like, the center of our emotions, what do we do with a heart that naturally is inclined towards evil, towards me, towards self? What do we do with it? Well, first, I think it's important that we ask specifically for today, what does your heart tell you? And I want to maybe push this a little bit. What does your heart tell you in uncertainty? There's your T-way. What does your heart tell you in uncertainty? Think about that for a moment. I guarantee that every single person sitting here and who will listen to this podcast is living in a moment of uncertainty. Job-wise, relationship-wise, past hurt that we're carrying with, news that we just got, news that we got years ago. What do we do in times of uncertainty, of doubt and fear, and especially when there's pain in our lives? What do we do? What does your heart tell you? You did something to deserve it. You're a failure. We fear. We feel rejection, anger, and our heart naturally is bent that way. So in the series, we're trying to find out, how do we solve these issues, specifically today in uncertainty, in pain, in doubt, in fear, in a tough season where we feel like everything is against us. And we have those seasons. You may not be there now, but if you're sitting here, you have lived those seasons more than once, as I have as well. We need to realize that the matter of all this is the heart. At the root of all this is the heart. We need some wisdom. We need some direction. We need to realize that it's the very crux of all of our being. As I've been studying for the series, I've naturally been studying about the heart and cardiology work, and I discovered that doctors often do this test for people called an angiogram. You guys know what that is? I'm going to share for the sake of me relearning what I did. So they basically take a dye and they put it in your bloodstream, and then you get an x-ray, and then the x-ray will show up where you have blockages in your arteries. Ironically, people usually don't go in to get an angiogram to test to see how their heart is. Don't miss this, please. People usually wind up having an angiogram after they've tried everything else. Like, people will have vision problems, back problems, anxiety, sleepless stents, blood high blood pressure, and all these things. And they're all traced back to cardiovascular problems. But we try to treat the symptoms only, like these external things. And we take like that pill for the back pain, but there's got to be something deeper, right? Like, what's causing that? So as we go through the series, I think we've got to do a heart check and realize where our hearts are at and how they're inclined, so that we don't just see these superficial symptoms and miss what's at the root of it. Because in the words of someone famous, if we keep doing the same thing over and over and expect a different result, it's what? Why would we do it with our hearts? So that's one part of what I'm trying to communicate this morning. The heart of the matter is that our heart is inclined towards this, first of all. We need to get it to the root of it. In seasons of pain, I want to try to be delicate this morning with the subject. And I'm almost going to, in a way, invite you to think about those seasons of pain that you're living or that you have lived. In seasons of pain, we tend to do one of two things. We tend to run to ourselves and try to resolve the pain and ask, what did we do wrong? Why am I a failure? Why is that not working out? And our hearts, since we know how they're naturally inclined, tend to deceive us. And we tend to drown a little bit more. Instead of being able to walk out of this, we tend to drown a little bit more because we go back to ourselves and there's a problem in our heart in the first place. It's more than that superficial symptom. The other option in times of pain and uncertainty and doubt and fear, physical or emotional pain. At other times, there are opportunities for us to run to God, to our Creator. Like, we're designed to want something that can help us, right? Think about that. I don't know where you're at in the spiritual category. I don't know where all of you are at. I would contend, though, that there are some people probably in here who don't want to get this, don't want to believe it, just don't believe it, and I'm glad you're here. I want this to be a place where you come and you say, and you're like, I don't believe that. Wherever you're at, though, we tend to want a higher power, right? Let me use it like that. We tend to want a deity to help us, to save us, because if we can't help and save ourselves, then we want something. At Love in Motion, we believe and we invite you to believe that Christ is good, the Son of God, and that He has a good plan. So there's an invitation for us in times of pain and uncertainty and doubt to run towards Him who is always good. Now, God is God and we are not. So if we're running to a deity, to somebody to help us and save us, we'd have to give Him the knowledge and the authority and the power that He has, which means simply this: we cannot grasp fully in our finite minds what He's doing, which is scary, especially in our day and age and culture. And we're like, I want to get it all and I want to swallow it and I want to be able to comprehend and say, of course. Faith always stretches us, though. So the invitation, is let this do a little bit of work in your heart. Today, right now, let it do a little bit of work as you hear this and say, what if there's some wisdom in this? What if I can gain some healing spiritually and emotionally in this morning from this word? Not because it's Poyo's words, because we take like God's word, which is our plumb line, and we're like, let's see what he says. And then let it wrestle with your heart. You wrestle with it. We're invited to. Acts chapter 17 in the Bible specifically says that they love when people go and wrestle with the word. Use your intellect. You've got it for a reason. But what if in this moment of uncertainty, pain, doubt, fear, and anxiety, we run hard to God? What if we open the door a little bit, it creaks a little bit because we're fearful and we're like, I don't want to even give it a shot. But what if we get to the point to where we're like, none of this has worked going to self ever. It's never worked for me. I'm 40 years old. I will be 40 years old. In June. Don't forget. 28th. You get where I'm going? But what if today, I'm going to open it a little bit. It hurts and I don't want to and I don't even know what he's doing. But what if today is that day where you're like, I'm just going to give up a little bit because it's not working my way. I invite you to run to the one who spoke and created something out of nothing. That's the God we're talking about. That's the deity. The one who, according to Genesis 1, very beginning, just go to the first page, created. He spoke. He created. What we see out there, the blue hues and the trees and the birds that we hear chirp and the person that you're sitting next to and can touch and feel and smell, he created those folks. That's the God that we're running to. I'm not asking you to go to an amulet and say, rub it the right way. Let's see if it helps you. No chance. Just look. No ordinary God. The God who, out of love, blew life into us. Run to that God in the questions, in the deep pain. Those sleepless nights where you're like, I just don't get it. I wish I would. Run to him. Here's a verse we're going to circle around today. If you've got a phone and you've got a Bible app, go there, please. It's 1 Corinthians chapter 9. I'm sorry. Yeah. 1 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 10. I hope I got that right. Anyway, let's go with the text. It looks like I made an error there, but I'm going to go with the text. So here, let me give you some context real quick. Paul is a guy who writes this book to the folks who live in Corinth, a little town. So the name of the book is Corinthians. He writes it to them. Kind of like saying, I'm going to write a book to the Dallasites. So Paul writes a book to the Corinthians. And he's telling the Corinthians about a bunch of pain that he's been through. A hell, don't miss that, a hell of a life that he's been through up to that point. And he's sharing what that pain did in his life, what it drove him to. And the context of the pain is that he's basically out in these towns hundreds of years ago, and he's talking about Jesus. So I want to give you some context so we get this. And then there are people who don't want him to talk about Jesus. And they're literally chasing him to kill him. It's hard for us to get because we don't get that here in the West where we live. Maybe we'll hear about stories like that across the world, but we often don't experience it, so it's hard for us to connect. So that's why I'm giving you context. So this is a guy who is going around telling people about Jesus. And he's starting churches. He's planting churches. A version of Love in Motion. He started a church there. Boom. He wants to tell people about Jesus and he wants to do good for the city. Follow me? And there are people in the government who oppose it. So now they're chasing this guy to try and kill him, literally. He's been in jail several times. They have put him in handcuffs and they have lashed his back 39 times to the point to where his back is open because they lash you with like bones that are stripped on whips, long leather whips, and they lash you 39 times. Not 40, 39. It's against the rules to do 40. There's a guy who's been on a boat and has been shipwrecked. Not a yacht with Wi-Fi, a boat made of wood. And he was shipwrecked. All he wants to do is do the work of God. Beaten up, imprisoned, hungry, nobody on his side, bitten by a snake at one point, thought he was going to die. So, I've given you the context. Now, did we find out where is this at, by the way? 2 Corinthians 1, verses 9 and 10?
Yeah.
Thank you. So if you needed a reference for that, maybe. Here we go. This is what Paul says in 2 Corinthians chapter 1, verses 9 and 10. He's writing a letter to the people and he's saying life has been hell. Literally. And he says this, we, him and his companions who were doing these trips, we felt sure that we were going to die. Have you ever felt like you were going to die? Perhaps not physically, but emotionally. Go with me there, please. I invite you to go with me there. Like times at night or you open your eyes in the morning, you're like, oh my goodness, I can't do another day. He felt like he was going to die. What did this cause? It said, but this made us stop trusting in ourselves. You see the natural reaction? Self. What should I do about this? There's pain, there's doubt, there's uncertainty. What happens to our hearts? Self. What can I do? How can I make it better? What Tony Robbins book should I go pick up and read? No, I heard Oprah has a real good one, or Dr. Phil. You don't need self-help. We need somebody to save us. We need to give up and say, I can't. We need to throw our hands up in the air. Say, Christ, please. So his natural reaction is like mine. And I would contend like yours too. Stop trusting in ourselves and start trusting God. Who is God? The one who raises the dead to life. God saved us and we are sure that he will do it again and again. Check out the beauty of this. He describes the God who he's relying on. What type of God is it? This is put in there for the strict purpose of creating hope in us. What type of God are we putting our hope in? One that I hope answers us when he's in a good mood. One that we hope we've acted well enough that when we do ask for help, he'll say, that's my girl. One that says, she's done okay, climbed the rung on the ladders well enough, so here's my blessing. Is that the God that we're relying on? No. It's an all-powerful God and an all-loving God. And this is how powerful he is, according to Paul. He says he raises the dead to life. That's our God. Not just created the cool little birds and the blue sky and the ocean when you're out in California and you love that stuff. Like the God who raises from the dead. This is what Paul is trying to say. The God who saves us and is with us and who wants to reach down, it's a God who has no impossibilities. So I invite us right now to go to that pain or those multiple pains that we have in our life and say, what if there is a God who has no impossibilities and who wants to reach down and help me in my pain? This is where we start creating hope. What if? What if he's there and he's whispering gently? He's like, you're my daughter. I'm close. Don't fear. I'm going to get you out of this. And that's what Paul wants to communicate to his people. In your fear, in your doubt, in the anxiety, I'm here. And I have no limitations. And he saved him. And what did that create? Certainty, because he says that he will save me again and again. Do you see what Paul's doing here? See how beautiful that is? He already did save me. He pulled me out of all of that. I'm certain he'll save me again and again. So as I get ready to close up, I want to invite us to get this. God is God. It's a pretty simple statement, but let it do what it's intended to do. We are not God. We don't have friends who are gods. We don't have friends who speak and the stars come out at night, according to Hebrews chapter 1, verse 3. God is God. He's good. He describes himself as our Father. Not like a earthly father who fails and messes up and loses his temper, aka me. A heavenly Father who says, my son, my daughter, I love you, I'm for you. And I know what's best. And I can see all the way down to the finish line. When you can see the next step barely, I can see down the finish line. So trust me that in your pain, doubt, and anxiety, fears, trust me that I know where I'm leading you. God is God. He's good. So good that he gave what is most valuable and precious to him. Jesus. His one son. He said, go, son, die for these people. For the people who reject me often and choose to idolize other things, go and die for them because I love them and I pursue them. I am the hound of heaven who is on their heels often because there's value. God is good. Here, I want to emphasize on this real quick. His character should drive our behavior. Look at me for a second. His character should drive our behavior. It should mold and forge how we behave and how we respond. If you know my wife, she's really crafty, creative, and can create like MacGyver, like a bomb out of a popsicle stick, used bubble gum, and a twig. Yes, you know my wife well. My daughter knows my wife's character. My daughter is now at a point to where her behavior is guided by her mom's character. Don't let me lose you, please. We were at the store a couple days ago. We're walking down the hall and Eileen sees a skirt. And Eileen, our 10-year-old daughter, says, oh, look, pretty skirt. And she looks at the price and she's like, oh, no, let's not buy it. Let's make it. Here. This isn't about my daughter or about my wife. My wife's character has influenced my daughter's behavior. God's character is that he is good and loving and knows the end. He's for us, not against us. In our doubt, in our pain, in our fears, and in our uncertainties, we should remember that. And we should let that shape our behavior. It's an invitation to hope. To hope what is not there, not because we grab ourselves from the bootstraps and we try to muster up faith. It's not what he calls us to. It's a relationship he calls us to. And he says, because I am for you, I will walk through this with you. It's his character. It's not how much I can muster up and try to imagine positive. It's not the amount of our faith. It's the object of our faith. The object of our faith is a God who creates something out of nothing. It is a God who raises the dead to life. It is a God who laid down the life of his son, Romans 8:32. And if he already gave what is most precious to him, don't miss this. If he already gave what is most precious to him, what would he withhold at that point? Already gave what's most valuable. Why would he say, I gave you my son to die on a cross, bloody, tortured, but I'm not going to give you this. He's already given what's most valuable. This is a message. And one of its biggest intentions is to recalibrate our faith. Not to try harder. Please don't miss that. Religion says try harder and maybe God will say, my boy. Love and emotion does not teach religion. And neither does Christ. He teaches relationship. I came, I did, and I continue to because of love. He is compelled by love. Let our hope today be recalibrated. You step on that scale and you weigh 50 pounds less and you're like, whoa, can't be. You got to go down there and recalibrate it, right? Because you know you're not 50 pounds less. Recalibrate your faith today. Like gently recalibrate, breath by breath. None of us are champs where we walk out of here today and we're like, boom, he gave me some steps. I'm not giving you steps. I'm putting God's truth out on the table and I invite you as a pastor to tenderly come and say, huh, I'm going to try some of that. Because I've tried way too long my way and my pain is so deep and my tears run often. I need help. That's the invitation. Recalibrate the little thing down here and you're like, God, nothing's impossible for you. Help me. Save me. Gray clouds. Broken kernels of wheat. Manure. And our personal pain. All of those are birthing catalysts. Gray clouds break with rain. Kernels of wheat, after they've been crushed, are put into an oven and you create some yummy bread. You take the manure, you put it in the ground, and it creates beautiful flowers. Your pain that you've been through or are in now, like me, it's never in vain. It births opportunities. The deepest pain in my life, deepest, occurred about 15 years ago, and I am pained right now in different ways. But the deepest pain in my life birthed literally me standing here this morning. And us as a people doing what we're doing in the city. It birthed beauty. I didn't see it then at all. But my first inclination was self. Pollo, Pollo, get yourself out of this. Pollo, get yourself out of this. If you're interested to know what I'm talking about, I invite you to go to Facebook. Check out a 9-minute video where I share my entire life story. Deep pain, physical, emotional, spiritual. And that birthed life. I'm not a coach. I'm not a pep talker. My job this morning is not to say, go, 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 you can do it. If anything, my invitation is, I'm sorry for your pain. I'm sorry for the hurt. I'm sorry of what's happened. And then to say, but there is hope. But there is hope. The grace abounds. The cup runs over, spills off of the table, and it keeps coming. That's how good God is. I'm going to read this. It's lyrics of an old hymn, and then we'll finish up. The hymn is called God moves in mysterious ways. Just be silent for a moment. Maybe close your eyes as I read them. Don't have to. Just let the words speak. In your pain, in your doubt, anxiety, and fear. Here we go. O fearful saints, fresh courage take. The clouds you so much dread are big with mercy and shall break in blessings on your head. Judge not the Lord by feeble sense, but trust him for his grace. Behind a frowning providence, he hides a smiling face. His purposes will ripen fast, unfolding every hour. The bud may have a bitter taste, but sweet will be the flower. Jesus, thank you because you're at work here today in the midst of our pain. Heal it, redeem it, recalibrate our faith in you. Thank you for your kindness. Amen.